You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're going to be completing our look at the biology of belief, unleashing the power of consciousness, matter, and miracles by Bruce H. Lipton. We're reading the epilogue right now. And in the last show, we were looking at survival of the most loving. You may agree with Rumi's words on the power of love, our noble ones, but you may not believe that they fit these troubled times when survival of the fittest may seem more appropriate. Isn't Darwin right that violence is at the core of life? Isn't violence the way of the natural world? What about all those documentaries that show animals stalking animals, animals snaring animals, animals killing animals? Don't humans possess an inborn inclination to violence? The logic goes, animals are violent, humans are animals, and therefore humans are violent. No! Humans are not stuck with an innate, viciously competitive nature, any more than we are stuck with genes that make us sick or make us violent. Chimps, who are the closest to humans genetically, offer evidence that violence is not necessarily a part of our biology. One species of chimps, the bonobos, create peaceful communities with co-dominant males and females in charge. Unlike other chimps, the community of bonobos operates not with a violence-driven ethic, but with an ethic that can be described as make love, not war. When the chimps in this society become agitated, they don't engage in bloody fights. They diffuse their divisive energy by having sex. Recent research by Stanford University biologists Robert M. Sapolsky and Lisa J. Scher has found that even wild baboons, among the most aggressive animals on the planet, are not genetically mandated to be violent. In one well-studied baboon troop, the aggressive males died out from contaminated meat they foraged from a tourist garbage pit. In the wake of their deaths, the social structure of the troop was reinvented. Research suggests that females help steer the remaining less aggressive males into more cooperative behaviors, which led to a uniquely peaceful community. In an editorial in Public Library of Science Biology, where the Stanford research was published, chimp researchers Frange B. DeWaal of Emory University wrote, quote, "Even the fiercest primates do not forever need to stay this way." DeWaal, 2004. In addition, no matter how many National Geographic specials you've watched, there is no dog-eat-dog imperative for humans. We are at the top of the predator-prey food chain. Our survival is dependent on eating organisms lower in the hierarchy. We are not subject to being eaten by organisms higher up in the chain. Without natural predators, humans are spared from becoming prey and from all the violence that the term implies. That does not mean that humans are outside the laws of nature, of course, for eventually we shall be eaten. We are mortal, and following our demise, one would hope after a long and violence-free life, our corporal remains will be consumed and recycled back into the environment. Like a snake turning on itself, humans at the top of the food chain will eventually be devoured by organisms that are on the lowest of the food chain, the bacteria. But before that snake turns, we may not live a violence-free life. Despite our lofty position on the food chain, we are our own worst enemy. More than any other animal, we turn on ourselves. Lower-level animals sometimes turn on themselves, but most aggressive encounters among members of the same species are limited to threatening postures, sounds, and scents, not death. And in social populations other than humans, the primary cause of intraspecies violence is either the acquisition of air, water, and food required for survival, or the selections of mates for propagation. In contrast, the violence among humans that is directly linked to securing subsistence or in the process of mate selection is quite minimal. Human violence is more often associated with the acquisition of material possessions beyond what is necessary for subsistence or the distribution and purchase of drugs to escape the nightmare would we have created or child and spousal abuse passed down generation after generation. Perhaps the most widespread and insidious form of human violence is ideological control. Throughout history, religious movements and governments have repeatedly prodded their constituents into aggression and violence to deal with dissenters and non-believers. Most human violence is neither necessary nor is it inherent. Genetic animal survival skill. We have the ability, and I believe an evolutionary mandate, to stop violence. The best way to stop it is to realize, as I emphasized in the last chapter of this book, that we are spiritual beings, we need love as much as we need food, but we won't get to the next evolutionary step by just thinking about just as we can't change our children's and our lives simply by reading books. A better way is to join communities of like-minded people who are working towards advancing human civilization by realizing that survival of the most loving is the only ethic that will ensure not only a healthy personal life, but also a healthy planet. Remember those underprepared, underappreciated Caribbean students who banded together, like the cells they studied in their histology course? To form a community of successful students, use them as role models, and you will help ensure a Hollywood ending, not just for individuals mired in self-sabotaging beliefs, but also for this planet. Use the intelligence of cells to propel humanity one more rung up the evolutionary ladder, where the most loving do more than just survive. They actually thrive. Additum. The science revealed in this book defines how beliefs control behavior and gene activity, and consequently the unfolding of our lives. The section on conscious parenting describes how most of us unavoidably acquired limiting or self-sabotaging beliefs that were downloaded into our subconscious minds when we were children. As I mentioned in that chapter, there are a variety of energy psychology techniques which exploit the latest mind-body research to quickly access and reprogram those subconscious programs. Before we end this discussion, I'd like to talk a little more about one of these energy psychology techniques called Psych-K, because I have personal experience with it, and I'm confident of its integrity, simplicity, and effectiveness. I met Rob Williams, the originator of Psych-K, at a conference in 1990 where we were both presenters. As usual, at the conclusion of my presentation, I told my audience that if they changed their beliefs, they could change their lives. It was a familiar conclusion with a familiar response from the participants. Well, Bruce, that's great, but how do I do that? In those days, I didn't fully realize the crucial role the subconscious mind plays in the change process. Instead, I relied mostly on trying to power through negative behaviors using positive thinking and willpower. I knew, though, that I had only limited success in making personal changes in my own life. I also knew that when I offered this solution, the energy in the room dropped like a lead balloon. It seems my sophisticated audience had, like me, already tried willpower and positive thinking with limited success. As fate would have it, I returned to my seat and looked up to see the next presenter was psychotherapist Rob Williams. Rob's opening remarks quickly had the entire audience on the edge of our seats. In his introduction, Rob stated that Psych K can change long-standing limited beliefs in a matter of minutes. Rob then asked the audience if there was anyone who would like to address an issue that had been troubling them. One woman caught both Rob's and my attention. She raised her hand tentatively, first up, then down, then up again. Her timidity was palatable. When Rob asked what her issue was, her face turned red and her response was inaudible. Rob actually had to leave the podium and confer with her one-on-one. It was Rob who had to inform the audience that her problem was speaking in public. Rob returned to the stage and the woman hesitantly followed. Rob asked her to tell the audience of nearly 100 people a bit about her fear. Again, she could hardly speak. Rob worked with this woman for about 10 minutes using one of the Psych K change techniques. Then he again asked the woman to tell the audience how she felt about speaking to them. The change was astonishing. Not only was she visibly more relaxed, she began talking to the audience in an excited yet confident voice. The eyes of the conference attendees became like saucers and their mouths dropped as this woman took over the stage for the next 5 minutes. The woman got so carried away that Rob had to ask her to stop speaking and take her seat so he could finish his actual presentation. Because this woman was a regular attendee at an annual conference and I was a frequent presenter, I was able to witness her amazing transformation over the next several years. She not only had gotten over her fear of public speaking, but even went on to organize Toastmasters in her community. Eventually, she became an award-winning public speaker. This woman's life was truly transformed in just a few minutes. In the 15 years since I witnessed that woman's quick transformation, I have seen other people rapidly improve their self-esteem and change their relationships, their finances, and their health using the Psych K technique. The Psych K process is simple, direct, and verifiable. It utilizes the mind-body interface of muscle testing, kinesiology, that I first discovered in the student chiropractor's makeshift office in the Caribbean to access the self-limiting files in the subconscious mind. It also makes use of the left brain, right brain interrogation techniques to effect swift and long-lasting changes. In addition, Psych-K integrate spirit into that change process, just as I've integrated spirit into my understanding of science. Using muscle testing, Psych K accesses what Rob calls the superconscious mind to make sure that the person's stated goals are safe and appropriate. These built-in safeguards allow the system to personal change to be taught to anyone who's interested in taking charge of their lives by moving out fear and moving into love. I use the techniques of Psych K in my own life. Psych K has helped me undo my self-limiting beliefs, including one about not being able to finish my book. The fact that you are holding this book is one indication of the power of Psych K. I also lecture regularly with Rob. Instead of offering positive thinking and willpower at the end of my lectures, I instead happily turn audiences over to Rob. While this book is about new biology, I believe that Psych K represents an important step towards the new psychology for the 21st century and beyond. You can find more information about Psych K at Rob's website, www.psych-k.com or psych-k.com. You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby, and you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, Instructor of Future Studies at Simon Fraser University. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
With thousands of homeless animals entering SPCA shelters each year, pet overpopulation is a serious problem in BC. But it's one you can help prevent. Spay or neuter your companion animal today. From our perspective, every homeless animal on our streets or in our shelters is one too many. For more information on spaying and neutering initiatives, visit the BC SPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional futurist. Welcome back. We're now going to look at a brand new work. This work is called Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman with Greg McClone and a foreword by Stephen R. Covey. I will read the inside jacket just so you can see what makes this work interesting and why it should appear on Future Talk. We've all had experience with two dramatically different types of leaders. The first type drain intelligence, energy, and capabilities from those around them, always need to be the smartest ones in the room. These are the idea killers, the energy sappers, the diminishers of talent and commitment. On the other hand, are the spectrum of leaders who use their intelligence to amplify the smarts and capabilities of the people around them. When these leaders walk into a room, light bulbs go off over people's heads, ideas flow, creativity blossoms, problems get solved. These are the leaders who inspire employees to stretch themselves to deliver results that surpass expectations. These are the multipliers, and the world needs more of them, especially now when leaders are expected to do more with less. In this engaging and highly practical book, leadership expert Liz Wiseman and management consultant Greg McKeown explore the two leadership styles, persuasively showing how multipliers can have resounding positive and profitable effects on organizations, getting more done with fewer resources, developing and attracting talent, and cultivating new ideas and energy to drive organizational change and innovation. In analyzing data from more than 150 world leaders, Wiseman and McKeown have identified five disciplines that distinguish multipliers from diminishers. These five disciplines are not linked, are not based on innate talent. Indeed, they are skills and practices that everyone can learn to use, even lifelong and recalcitrant diminishers. Lively, real-world case studies and practical tips and techniques bring to life each of these principles, showing how you can become a multiplier too. Whether you're new or an experienced manager, just imagine what you could accomplish if you could harness all the energy and intelligence around you. And I should make a point here is that some of you will say, well, I'm not a manager. I don't run a company with employees, so therefore why should I listen to this? Well, at the very least, you are a CEO and manager of your own life. And so much of the information that's given here can have uses that in your own life to manage yourself. Multipliers. How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman. Forward. by Stephen R. Covey. I had the opportunity to work with a multiplier when I was in my early 20s. It profoundly shaped the rest of my life. I had decided to take a break in my education to provide extended volunteer service. The invitation came to go to England just 4.5 months after my arrival. The president of the organization came to me and said, "I have a new assignment for you. I want you to travel around the country and train local leaders." I was shocked. Who was I to train leaders in their 50s and 60s? Some of these individuals had been leading twice as long as I had been alive. Sensing my doubt, he simply looked me in the eye and said, "I have great confidence in you. You can do this. I will give you the materials and help you prepare to teach these leaders." It is hard to overstate the impact this leader has had on me. By the time I returned home, I began to detect the work I wanted to devote my life to. His particular ability, the ability to get more out of people than they knew they had to give, fascinated me. I have reflected on this many times, wondering what he did that got so much from me. The answer to this question is contained in this book. Liz Wiseman and her collaborator Greg McKeown have written a book that explores this idea more deeply than anything I have read elsewhere on the subject, and their timing could not have been better. New demands, insufficient resources. At a time when many organizations do not have the luxury of adding or transferring resources to tackle major challenges, they must find the capabilities within their current ranks. The ability to extract and multiply the intelligence that already exists within organizations is a red-hot relevance right now. Across industries and organizations of all kinds, leaders now find themselves in what David Allen has summarized as, quote, "new demands, insufficient resources," close quote. For some 40 years, I have worked with organizations that were grappling with new demands and insufficient resources. I have become convinced that the biggest leadership challenge of our times is not insufficient resources per se, but rather our inability to access the most valuable resources at our disposal. When I ask in my seminars, how many of you would agree that the vast majority of the workforce possesses far more capability, creativity, talent, initiative, and resourcefulness than their present jobs allow or even require them to use? The affirmative response is about 99%. Then, I ask the question, who here feels the pressure to produce more from less? Again, a sea of hands goes up. When you put these two questions together, you can see the challenge. As stated, indeed, people are often overworked and underutilized. Some corporations have made hiring the most intelligent individuals a core strategy on the basis that smarter people can solve problems more quickly than the competition. But that only works if the organization can access that intelligence. Organizations that figure out how to better access this vastly underutilized resource won't just be more enjoyable places to work. They will outperform their competitors. In this global environment, this might well make the difference between companies that make it and companies that don't. And as with so many business challenges, leadership is clearly a critical force for leveraging the full capability of the organization. The new idea. Multipliers, how the best leaders make everyone smarter, represents nothing less than the leadership paradigm necessary for accessing the intelligence and potential of people and organizations everywhere. It unearths and explains why some leaders create genius all around them, while other leaders drain intelligence, motivation, and capabilities from an organization. Peter Drucker spoke of what is at stake when he wrote, quote, "The most important and indeed truly unique contribution of the management of the 20th century was the 50-fold increase in the productivity of the manual worker in manufacturing. The most important contribution management needs to make in the 21st century is similarly to increase the productivity of knowledge work and of the knowledge worker. The most valuable assets of the 20th century company are in its production equipment. The most valuable asset of the 21st century institution, whether business or non-business, will be its knowledge workers and with their productivity." This work explains with great clarity the kinds of leaders who will answer the promise outlined by Drucker and those that will not. As I read this book, the key insight was that multipliers are hard-edged managers. There's nothing soft about these leaders. They expect great things from their people and drive them to achieve extraordinary results. Another insight that resonated with me is that people actually get smarter and more capable around multipliers. That is, people don't just feel smarter, they actually become smarter. They can solve harder problems. They can adapt more quickly. They can take on more intelligent action. People who understand these ideas will be well positioned to make the shift the authors describe from genius, where they may try to be the smartest person in the room, to genius maker, where they use their intelligence to access and multiply the genius in others. The power of such a shift is difficult to overstate. It is a night and day difference. What I, Stephen Covey, love about this book is that I admire the work and insight for several reasons. First, the journalistic integrity and sheer tenacity required to analyze over 150 executives from around the globe. The book is full of rich and vivid examples gathered from all over the world. Second, for the way this book focuses on just a few things that really differentiate intelligence, multipliers and intelligence, diminishers and a lack of intelligence. This isn't a book on leadership with all the good qualities on one side and all the bad qualities on the other. It is more precise than that, identifying and illustrating only the five most differentiated disciplines. Third, for the book's range of motion, this book names a phenomena on the way Malcolm Gladwell seems to be able to, but also goes down several layers to provide practical insight into exactly how to lead like a multiplier. Fourth, for the way the book seamlessly combines cutting-edge insight with timeless principles. Many books do one or the other. Few do both. This book will relate to your life today and will connect to your conscience as well. We're going to look much more deeply into this in upcoming shows. So I ask you to please stay tuned to more interesting examination of the future of work and how managers can become better at what they do for confronting the enormous challenges that they will face in the 21st century.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby, and Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
Listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.